Ms. Dunn's keycard shows a Pod 5 entry event about a minute ago. Catherine slammed on the brakes, sliding to a halt in the middle of the abyss.
He already unlocked Pod 5?
She whispered into the phone. The guard was typing frantically.
Yes, it looks like he entered 90 seconds ago.
Catherine's body went rigid. She stopped breathing. The darkness felt suddenly alive all around her.
He's in here with me.
In an instant, Catherine realized that the only light in the entire space was coming from her cell phone, illuminating the side of her face.
Send help, she whispered to the guard, and get to Wet Pod to help Trish.
Then she quietly closed her phone, extinguishing the light. Absolute darkness settled around her. She stood stock still and breathed as quietly as possible. After a few seconds, the pungent scent of ethanol wafted out of the darkness in front of her. The smell got stronger. She could sense a presence only a few feet in front of her on the carpet. In the silence, the pounding of Catherine's heart seemed loud enough to give her away. Silently, she stepped out of her shoes and inched to her left, sidestepping off the carpet. The cement felt cold under her feet. She took one more step to clear the carpet. One of her toes cracked. It sounded like a gunshot in the stillness. Only a few yards away, a rustle of clothing suddenly came at her out of the darkness. Catherine bolted an instant too late, and a powerful arm snagged her, groping in the darkness, hands violently attempting to gain purchase. She spun away as a vice-like grip caught her lab coat, yanking her backward, reeling her in. Catherine threw her arms backward, slithering out of her lab coat and slipping free. Suddenly, with no idea anymore which way was out, Catherine Solomon found herself dashing, dead blind, across an endless black abyss. Chapter 46. Despite containing what many have called the most beautiful room in the world, the Library of Congress is known less for its breathtaking splendor than for its vast collections. With over 500 miles of shelves, enough to stretch from Washington, D.C. to Boston, it easily claims the title of largest library on earth. And yet still, it expands at a rate of over 10,000 items per day. As an early repository for Thomas Jefferson's personal collection of books on science and philosophy, the library stood as a symbol of America's commitment to the dissemination of knowledge. One of the first buildings in Washington to have electric lights, it literally shone like a beacon in the darkness of the New World. As its name implies, the Library of Congress was established to serve Congress, whose venerated members worked across the street in the Capitol building. This age-old bond between library and Capitol had been fortified recently by the construction of a physical connection, a long tunnel beneath Independence Avenue that linked the two buildings. Tonight, inside this dimly lit tunnel, Robert Langdon followed Warren Bellamy through a construction zone, trying to quell his own deepening concern for Catherine. This lunatic is at her lab? Langdon didn't even want to imagine why. When he had called to warn her, Langdon had told Catherine exactly where to meet him before they hung up. How much longer is this damn tunnel? His head ached now, a roiling torrent of interconnected thoughts. Catherine, Peter, the Masons, Bellamy, pyramids, ancient prophecy, and a map. Langdon shook it all off and pressed on. Bellamy promised me answers. When the two men finally reached the end of the passage, Bellamy guided Langdon through a set of double doors that were still under construction. Finding no way to lock the unfinished doors behind them, Bellamy improvised, grabbing an aluminum ladder from the construction supplies and leaning it precariously against the outside of the door. Then he balanced a metal bucket on top. If anyone opened the door, the bucket would crash loudly to the floor. That's our alarm system? Langdon eyed the perched bucket, hoping Bellamy had a more comprehensive plan for their safety tonight. Everything had happened so fast, and Langdon was only now starting to process the repercussions of his fleeing with Bellamy. I'm a fugitive from the CIA. Bellamy led the way around a corner where the two men began ascending a wide staircase that was cordoned off with orange pylons. Langdon's day bag weighed him down as he climbed. The stone pyramid, he said. I still don't understand.
Not here, Bellamy interrupted. We'll examine it in the light. I know a safe place.
Langdon doubted such a place existed for anyone who had just physically assaulted the director of the CIA's Office of Security. As the two men reached the top of the stairs, they entered a wide hallway of Italian marble, stucco, and gold leaf. The hall was lined with 8 pairs of statues, all depicting the goddess Minerva. Bellamy pressed on, leading Langdon eastward through a vaulted archway into a far grander space. Even in the dim after-hours lighting, the library's great hall shone with the classical grandeur of an opulent European palace. 75 feet overhead, stained glass skylights glistened between paneled beams adorned with rare aluminum leaf, a metal that was considered to be more precious than gold at one time. Beneath that, a stately course of paired pillars lined the second-floor balcony, accessible by 2 magnificent curling staircases whose newel posts supported giant bronze female figures raising torches of enlightenment. In a bizarre attempt to reflect this theme of modern enlightenment and yet stay within the decorative register of Renaissance architecture, the stairway banisters had been carved with Cupid-like putti, portrayed as modern scientists. An angelic electrician holding a telephone? A cherubic entomologist with a specimen box? Langdon wondered what Bernini would have thought.
"We'll talk over here," Bellamy said, leading Langdon past the bulletproof display cases that contained the library's 2 most valuable books,
the giant Bible of Mainz, handwritten in the 1450s, and America's copy of the Gutenberg Bible, one of only 3 perfect vellum copies in the world. Fittingly, the vaulted ceiling overhead bore John White Alexander's 6-panel painting titled The Evolution of the Book. Bellamy strode directly to a pair of elegant double doors at the center rear of the east corridor wall. Langdon knew what room lay beyond those doors, but it seemed a strange choice for a conversation. Notwithstanding the irony of talking in a space filled with silence, please signs, this room hardly seemed like a safe place. Located dead center of the library's cruciform-shaped floor plan, this chamber served as the heart of the building. Hiding in here was like breaking into a cathedral and hiding on the altar. Nonetheless, Bellamy unlocked the doors, stepped into the darkness beyond, and groped for the lights. When he flipped the switch, one of America's great architectural masterpieces seemed to materialize out of thin air. The famous reading room was a feast for the senses. A voluminous octagon rose 160 feet at its center. Its 8 sides, finished in chocolate-brown Tennessee marble, cream-colored Siena marble, and apple-red Algerian marble. Because it was lit from 8 angles, no shadows fell anywhere, creating the effect that the room itself was glowing.
"Some say it's the most striking room in Washington," Bellamy said, ushering Langdon inside. "Maybe in the